Thank you so much, Tanya. And hi, everyone. I'm Jody. And I just want to give you a really big, warm welcome to this event, especially those of you who are joining for the first time to come to an ODF event. You're very welcome. And if you're joining us from the Either/Org community, is there anyone, maybe just give a wave if you are joining because you already are connected with the Either/Org project. Maybe. Okay. So Stephanie, I know you have people that are connected with that project who might be here as well. So at ODF, we are running a series of events throughout the year. So feel free to sign up for more as you go. But today, I'm really here to introduce and to be your host. So I want to introduce Stephanie Joya. Stephanie is the leader of the Either/Org project, among other things. And I met Stephanie this summer and learned a bit about what she's doing. And I was really inspired to bring more of what she does to this group, because I thought that a lot of people here, a lot of you would really be interested and excited about it as I have been. So, Stephanie, by way of introduction, is really passionate about moving the world forward towards humane and meaningful work. Stephanie, you're a consultant. Stephanie's a consultant with Future Work Design. And an instructor for the Executive MBA at University of Oregon, and as well as leading Either/Org. And that is the role in which, I guess, Stephanie, we're going to talk about today. So this is a grassroots research project that collects org design inspiration. And so I'm going to hand over to you, Stephanie, to share with everyone here a bit of the really fascinating story about how it came about. And what it is, and then we'll do a bit of a demo to share with people.
Right. Fun. All right. So nice to see everyone. See a lot of new faces and some familiar faces too. This project was I've never done anything like this, and it's been such a fun adventure. So yeah, so we sometimes we call it the Either/Org project. Sometimes we think of it as an inspiration lab, but this project, it's a total pandemic baby. It's a 2020, a bunch of org design nerds pent up in our quarantines, like who are lonely and looking to connect. And so there were a whole series of conversations, mostly between some folks on the academic side of organizational design and practitioners. And predominantly, also, this group was predominantly women and predominantly people of color. And we were kind of sharing the question came up of where do you go for inspiration when you're working with a client and you want to show them like there's a big range of possibilities of, beyond what you maybe have seen where other places you've worked before. And so we were all sharing like, well, where do you go when you're looking for that inspiration? And the we ended up deciding we all had like our individual files, like places where we kind of had kept our own catalog collection of things. And where we're like, well, somebody must have like put something together for this. So we started interviewing people all over the world and sort of collecting where are they hiding their inspiration? And we just heard over and over. We did this for about 6 months, and over we heard people say, well, I have my own thing. Or maybe there's like some interesting pockets, but there's nothing really that brings it together. And like, you should do that. People kept saying like, but if you did that, that would be great. And so we were like, oh no, I think we have to do this. So we set up an Airtable and just threw everyone basically shared their personal collections. And it as you would imagine, it became an absolute mess very quickly. You know, I think there were about 300 people contributing to an Airtable. Total chaos. And so then it, sort of a project developed around it over time to curate that and to refine that and to see what sort of patterns were emerging from it. And pretty quickly, we were inspired by Christopher Alexander's work in pattern language, which is was built around architecture and the built environment, but developing a syntax and a language around how the parts of buildings and how buildings and communities are constructed, and really thinking it would be beautiful to have that for organizational design. It's been developed for actually quite a number of design fields. And wow, we should really, wouldn't it be cool if we did that for organizational design? So, that's what we have been on a journey of. So I think Jody described it really well. Let me go to my next slide here. It's a grassroots, like this community, an all volunteer collection of people who are collecting organizational design inspiration around the world and really trying to create that into a free and open, usable resource. And so, yeah, our mission is to bring innovation and integrity to organizational design and inspire liberatory futures of work. So I kind of left, I probably didn't pay enough justice to that part, which is a big problem that we see in organizational design is a bit of a lack of creativity in what's possible. And if we want to build better organizations, recognizing that work is broken for a lot of people, that we need to be more inspired about what's possible. So that was a big driving factor on this. And our dream is to equip everyone with inspiring alternatives so that they can be deliberate and brave in designing workplaces that align with their values. And I'll show you a little bit more about how that values piece works. People always ask, what do you mean by org design? You are like the perfect audience. I don't really have to explain this, but for most people we're working with, they maybe haven't heard of the field of org design. They're founders, leaders in organizations. So we kind of explain, well, this is what we mean by it. And this sort of taxonomy emerged from the work of this collective. If you're a bit of a geek about taxonomies, I will post a link to an article that explains how we got to this taxonomy and all of the other kind of related org design frameworks that fed into it. But it's probably everything you're expecting, everything from fundamental structure to people structure, the classic like HR stuff in that pink section, individual performance and incentives, and all the way into experiential context, the digital and the built environment of work. So that's what's part of the project there. And these are really kind of our guiding, these are like the what makes this project, I think, really unique. So it's really about bringing together the idea of choice, fit, and liberation. So by choice, we strongly believe that every aspect of an organization's design should be an intentional choice inspired by a diverse set of options, that a lot of organization design in practice is very much a default, or people perhaps not even being aware that there is choice around some of the key design choices in organizations. Fit, so that organizations are most effective when their organization design tightly aligns with purpose, context, business model, values. I see a lot of nodding there, so I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but this project has a pretty strong point of view that like best practice is kind of bullshit, like that it is not, the goal is not to converge to the same like right way of doing things, that it's really about having a diverse set of options and finding the right fit for what's appropriate. William, I appreciate you pumping me up on that. Thank you. And then liberation, that we can stop replicating workplaces that really are emerged from the sort of lineage and inheritance that we have. Many of our organizations are kind of, were built in a culture of different forms of supremacy, colonialism, patriarchy. And we can reimagine a brave new generation of organizations. So those are really the what's been animating this project from the beginning. This is probably a little too much here, but this is our theory of change. So it starts with this idea that if we can share inspiring alternatives for values-driven organizational design, we can fill one small hole of what it takes to design organizations with integrity, which is this inspiration gap that we're seeing. There's still a lot of this project is not trying to be like, here's how you design organizations with integrity, and here's everything you need to know to do that. There's still so much process and art and care that all of you do as designers, and experimentation, but we're really trying to fill this gap, which is this inspiration gap, that we see as missing. And then if we are able to design organizations with integrity, that supports a generation of diverse founders and leaders who can be inspired and deliberate and brave in designing organizations that are better than anything they've experienced before. So we just meet so many founders who they become a founder because they believe that they want to do it better. They want to build something that they want to be a better manager than any manager that they had. And they want to build something that's free of all the problems that they've experienced elsewhere. And so this is really to support those folks. And if we're able to do that, we believe that organizations evolve to be more effective, humane, and responsible. And ultimately, we work toward this grand vision of a pluriverse, which is liberated from all forms of supremacy. So that is the our connection to the larger goal in which we are in solidarity, but playing a very small role as a small group of, not that small. There's about like 600 people in the LinkedIn group, but active contributors is, as you would imagine, much smaller than that. Okay, so Jody and I thought the best way to do this is to kind of show you how the Inspiration Library works. We're so excited. This launched earlier this year. We took it out of messy Airtable mode and it's free, open to the public. It's now built on a Notion platform. Again, we're pretty cheap. We have no budget. So I'm sure we could do fancier things with user experience, but it's working pretty well and we're happy to be able to make it public. So, Jody, let's try
Stephanie.
this out. We're going to do this. Oops, there we go.
Yeah. I can see and from the comments and from some of the from looking at people's faces that people are already inspired just from hearing about this. I'm excited to let everyone know that, hey, look, it really works when we run through, when we search for things in this library. So I'm inspired by the library. Let's try what happens with a real example.
Okay, we're gonna test it out. Let's do it. Okay, so this is the main website. We have some sort of information about the project, but I'm gonna go into explore the Inspiration Library. And this is like a relational database. So each of these cards is a pattern in the library. And so yeah, Jody, I would just start by saying like give me a client that you're working with. What's a challenge that you have where you really could use some inspiration? And we'll see what we can do.
Okay, let's jump in. So, right, I've got a company that I'm working with. Well, I'll use this as an example. My example is an agriculture company that has a strong sustainability vision. But so this is not a disruptive startup. This is a big established company. Right now, they sell products that protect crops so that they can help farmers to maximize food production. And they really want to transform. Their goal is to shift towards products that do less harm and regenerate the environment. So the products like products to help with soil health, to regenerate the soil, products like robotic technology that minimizes the application of pesticides. So this and people in this company are highly motivated, but they're struggling with a system that resists change. So they're stuck in old behaviors and habits. and the innovations they want to bring to the market, they don't really gain traction very fast. So there's things about this, there's things about the way they've designed the company that is stopping the progress they want to make. So the question is, can we find some ways? What are some inspiring ways to change the system that enables the transformation? So, I know there's not a here's one way to fix this, but I'd love to help this company to imagine things that they can do differently and give them some practical examples.
Okay, took lots of notes. Let's try this. Okay, so one thing I heard you say is sustainability, and like, what are inspiring organizational designs for sustainability? And I think that's a perfect thing to show people, because sustainability is one of the what are called goals or values. So one of the things, let me hear, sidebar here, so the patterns in the library are categorized by a lot of different things. Let me show you. So they're categorized by categories. They're also categorized by goal. And the goals are here. You see them across the top. Let me actually flip back really quick here. These are those goals or values. And so these all emerge as we. Whenever we were capturing a pattern from an organization, we asked the organization, what was your strategic reason for making that choice? And we did that just like free form. And then out of that emerged this taxonomy of goals. So these goals being like strategic reasons for an organizational design choice. And so the one I'm hearing you say, Jody, is this sustainability one, which we've described as we want to reduce negative environmental impacts and hold regenerative relationships with our planet, which actually sounds pretty close to what you just said.
Sounds really close to
Okay.
what, and that wasn't because I
Great.
read this. That is really
That's great.
perfect.
Okay. We're on to something. Okay. So what we can do is look through, let's look at all of the sustainability patterns that are in here. And the color coding is kind of which category they belong to. So these pinkish ones are compensation and benefits. The orangey ones are decisions, planning, and change. Blue ones are boundaries and oh, actually, that's the higher level category. But fundamental structure. We have some experiential ones in here. There's a decent number. Why don't you look at this list of categories, Jody, and see if there might be some things here where you're like, they're not really interested in changing their legal structure and ownership, so we don't need to look there. But what are some of the maybe levers that you think they're open to getting inspiration about?
Yeah, exactly. So I think ownership structure is not really relevant in this case, but governance could be relevant there, and talent mobility and role design, decisions, actually a lot of them, but so let's just think a lot. Role design, decisions, relationships. Yeah, probably all of the rest would
All of
fit.
the rest. Okay,
Let's see,
let's.
maybe that gives us too many
So
options.
we're at five. Well, let's just go here. Let's just see. You know,
Sure.
and obviously you can just explore as much as you want. Go down all the rabbit holes. Okay, so there's five though here. I'm curious if any of these stick out either as like you want to know more, or you think, that's like sparking something already.
Okay, yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, polarity management jumped out straight away, but also two loops. I'm probably more interested in hearing about two loops because I'm but like to kind of hear more about what that is. Yeah.
Okay, this is a great. Okay, I'm going to pause here to give people a look into what's inside a pattern. So, a pattern is linked to a category, it's linked to a design question. So, because pattern languages are, we're trying to move toward this idea of a pattern language, which is all framed around design questions. So, that's how are new ideas and change handled? And you could actually just look at that design question and look at all different answers that we see to that question. Then I'll have a description. This one's pretty long. I'll go into that, but just to give you an overview, all of this is like written by people like you. So some of these I go in and I'm like, that's like That could use some work. And then some of them are really beautifully written. So if you go in here and you're like, this could be better, please help us make it better. That would be awesome. Okay, and then it has these goals, which are the sort of the reasons why an organization might choose this two loops model. And then it will have advantages and disadvantages, which are usually like organizations that this might be suitable for and organizations this might be less suitable for. And then it'll have a case study, usually not always, of how a specific organization has implemented that, and then some reference links. So, okay, so two loops, Jody. So we see here it's a theory developed out of the Berkana Institute. It's a conceptual framework for understanding how systems and change over time, and it visualizes change as two overlapping loops. I actually love this theory, Jody. So I'm gonna go. I know this link is pretty good here. So it'll take you to other material that exists. And this is actually a beautiful presentation that explains it, but it reminded me of when you're talking about the sort of hospicing this dying kind of part of the industry, and there was a part where you talked about resistance. So there's the sort of stages. It helps you predict those stages of delusion, then decline, the decomposing, the resistance. So it kind of might help your client really name these sort of phases that they're going through. And then the second loop, what emerges out of that, and it gives some cues to look for. So emergence, this is probably making everyone seasick. But anyway, there's a lot of good stuff here I think you could use. I'm curious if this feels like it's might be helpful or inspiring.
Yeah, I want, yes, there's so much that, Stephanie, there's so much there. And obviously, I couldn't, and everyone couldn't read all of that. But I think we're trying to give people the idea of what's there so that they can go after and have a look at it. But so I would say when I saw two loops there, I didn't know what it was. But now that you've pulled it up, I recognize it. And it's super helpful to me because this is an approach. And I'm not going to try and explain the whole theory to everyone, but this is something that actually, in the work that I do, I work with really established traditional companies. And this reminds me that part of my role is helping them transition from a successful way of doing business that they had before, which is going to be, they're trying to replace it with something else. But my job might be not so much to help them figure out the new innovative stuff, but to help them figure out how to move away from the older ways of doing things. So that in itself is a spark of inspiration that's helping me to think of things in different ways.
Well,
I
that's
wanted to.
reminding me, Jody, like there's a great book called Hospicing Modernity. And like in my mind, I'm like, oh, that should be in here as like a reference link. And so that's something I can show you all how to do that too. Just to, you can add, if you have a suggestion of something that should be in the library, just please drop a line in and help us do that.
Yeah, let's get really practical because I
Okay.
know there's a lot of really smart people in this group here who know a lot about this. And there might also be people here going, what on earth are they talking about? so feel free to write in the comments, guys, if you think we're getting too theoretical. Yeah, and maybe let's give one more practical
Sure, you
example.
want to look at a different one?
Yeah, I think in this one, triple bottom line,
Okay.
something that might be really interesting as well. Not exactly like something we haven't heard of before, but I think with my clients, if there are case studies of how other companies have approached this, that would be really interesting.
Yeah, okay. So this one's linked to decisions, planning, and change, and answering that question, how does the organization measure its performance and learn and improve? And so this is like, yeah, not just the conceptual idea of triple bottom line, which is sometimes called like people, planet, profit, but this is building that into your P&L and your accounting. And so that at the high level, this is kind of the idea of organizations tracking their profit and loss at to include social, environmental, ecological impacts. So, okay, let's do a case study because we haven't gone into a case study yet. But there's some good references here. So this case study is Natura. I know about this one too. Okay, so this is a Brazilian company. So when you go into the case studies, so I said this is a relational database, like the patterns are like generalizable, and then the case studies are one specific organization's experience of that pattern. So this is how Natura operationalizes this concept. And they do something called an environmental P&L. This is a huge beauty brand. It includes brands like Avon, Body Shop, Aesop, Natura. And they've been doing this since 2016. And I know for this one, it links to a case study. So I would say for the just for awareness, where there's already something good that's written up, we usually just link to the original thing, and you can go down in a new rabbit hole somewhere else. But there has been a good deal of primary research as well, where case studies were written up for the first time for the project. And in that case, sometimes there's a lot more content in the case study itself. But yeah, this actually explains, they're very public about how they do their accounting for, oh, let's see, their whole methodology, how they do their data collection, measurement, and valuation. And there's like a ton of documentation on here that you could bring into your client, Jody. What do you think?
I think I think it's great because there's a 'cause case study is something super interesting to share. And like you said before, I'm totally one of those people who says it's not for best practice benchmarking that I give something to the client so they can copy it, but it really helps them to imagine what's possible. And I feel like that's part of what I want to do. So big thumbs up from me.
Okay,
As a
cool.
little example, I'm Stephanie. We want to get people a bit into groups so they can chat as well. And there's so much to cover. But before we do that, I wanted to just pause and see if there's one or two questions already for Stephanie. And I think there's one in the chat at least. Bernard, in the chat, you asked, how did you resource the work for this? So there's clearly a lot of analytical and organizing work behind this. How did you do it?
People, this is a common question, and when I say it's a bunch of volunteers, people are like, don't really believe me, but that's how it's been running. Is that unsustainable? Sometimes it feels like it. There's a guiding council of six fantastic organizational design leaders. I'm the kind of lab director. I do a lot of legwork on it. And then we have curators, and the curators are kind of our volunteers. We've tended to do the curation in cycles. So those are usually like a 6-month commitment. And so maybe I can interest some of you in taking a 6-month spin on an area that you're really passionate about and would like to learn more about. And that's kind of what's fueled this whole thing is individuals' desire for meaningful connection on things that like can help them professionally if they can get that much smarter on it. And by you sharing what you know and what you bring to it, you kind of help make it better for everyone.
Wonderful, beautiful. Is there one more question maybe before we go into breakouts? It's okay. Okay, good.
So, Julie, this is William.
William.
I want to say that ultimately, at the meta level, sorry for the ambulance going by, but at the meta level, The issue is that the planet is bereft of love, and that is because of a lack of actually the colonization and oppression of the divine feminine. And so to me, what I'm seeing here and experiencing is bringing that together and making it available, which is how do we connect those who are developing really the new business models. Our institutions are crumbling, and this is a great opportunity for us to be entrepreneurs and pioneers. And so I'm just loving, Stephanie, what you've done. Julie, I mean, you always introduce us to really new, cool things. And that explorer perspective that you have, looking for new things and sharing them with people, is amazing. And I just needed to make that comment since nobody had a question.
Thanks, William. Thank you. And also for the, I can see, and I'm looking at the audience, that the love coming that you're bringing into the room as well. So thank you. Let us have a chance to go into breakouts. It'll be short, but it is always, I always find it's really wonderful to connect in a small group so you can do a bit of introducing and connecting and sharing. So we're going to put you in for maybe 10 minutes, and I'll give you three guiding questions, which Tanya, as always, will copy into the chat. So you don't have to remember what I'm saying now. But the three guiding questions are, number one, introduce yourself with your name and sharing one place you go for inspiration in your work. So by that, I mean, if you didn't know about either org, for me, that would be, for example, when I need to look for case studies and examples, there's a few things, but one is a book called Humanocracy by Gary Hamel and Zanini. I love the examples that are in there. Second question, describe one situation where you could imagine using the either org library. So is there a challenge that you've got where you could go and apply it there? And three, share an example of how you have introduced inspiration to your stakeholders, for example, your clients. So if you do have a great example, how do you actually go about kind of inserting it or sharing it with them? I think that would be helpful to know. Okay. With that, let's go ahead and we'll see you back in here and we'll do a very quick debrief afterwards.
All right, so everybody will automatically go into your rooms and then I'll pull you back together. You'll get a 60-second countdown before we reconvene here in the main space. Have fun.
Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to.
It saved it when it kicked me out, and then it'll start up new again.
Everything is magically working.
Wonderful.
Okay, is everyone back? Welcome back, everyone. We realized that you might not all have got the three questions in your chat. You might not have got to take them with you. And that's okay. We totally trust that you found a way to have a beautiful conversation, whether you had questions fed from us as well. So I'm really sure of that. We're going to take a little bit of time now, perhaps to share in the bigger group. I'm very curious, and Stephanie's very curious to hear what you talked about. We do have a shared Google document that we're going to try and catch some of your ideas. And I'll put the link in the chat so that you can also go to the shared Google document. And you are very, very welcome to add in your answers and what you heard just to contribute to this collection, and we'll share it with everyone afterwards, of course. So here is a link to the shared document in the chat that we're curious to hear about. One of the questions that we posed to you was, what is a situation or a challenge where you could imagine using the either org library? Does anyone have something they'd like to share? And I know Stephanie's super curious about this, of where what you might search for in the library. Just jump in if there's something to share.
This is Judy. I can see using it on every single project that I have done. Like I've been doing org design for 25 years, and there's always, situations or the groups or the industry that's different or what they're trying to achieve. So it would, I've always kind of wanted to be able to do some kind of external benchmarking or have a source of inspiration. So I'm super excited to dig in.
Shuri, that's really great to hear.
Yes.
I'm
Something I hope we will get to as the project continues is because we are tagging the case studies by industry, by size, by led by people of color. Like we're trying to tag it pretty well so that as the data set gets more robust, you can do a more targeted search for, like Jody, you could look for manufacturing firms on your specific thing. Although I kind of love looking beyond, getting clients to look beyond their industry. I know some really want to see the exact example in their exact situation.
Yeah, I loved how when we were using it, Stephanie, you kind of do it live, like you could select more or less filters and you would see how many options popped up. So if you were getting, if there's a lot and you wanted to narrow it down, that was really easy to
So,
Anyone else?
yes, I will, of course,
Yeah.
because people are being quiet and I'm a intuitive extrovert on this, and archetypally I'm a storyteller. So one of the things that occurred to me was using this as a tool for my clients to use, having them go through it. So again, shifting from that me giving them answers to saying, here's this resource, let's go to it through it together like a canvas. And the other thing is, Bernard, you shared a really good example in our breakout. I wonder if you'd be willing to share that. And you're on mute.
Which example was that?
About how you would use it to take people, clients through to learn new ideas. But again, and what was really nice was your definition of how it wasn't benchmarking, but how, again, if you, I don't want to share everything that you said, but you got it.
I was saying, that I think all of us learn from the experiences of other people. And it's essential that we learn from the experiences of other people, in addition to, working with our own ideas. And case studies, of course, are one wonderful vehicle for that. And this particular database is a wonderful structure to obtain relevant case studies. The other alternative, of course, is to do a live case study, which, we call a field site visit, where we, go and bring a group of our clients to an existing organization that may have some of the features that we're exploring, and having people from that organization be able to engage in conversation with people from our client organizations is so powerful, because it's it allows people to break down the barriers of, well, how did you do that, and how did you solve that problem, and things like that. So, and again, the focus, for field site visits really so strongly has to be, the focus has to be on expanding our sense of possibility rather than finding the right answer that we want to bring back home, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
but that's really great. I've put something in the shared document about how you introduce inspiration. I really like that. Jim, you have your hand up. Thanks for being patient.
Yeah, very similar, just extending off what Bernard said, is that I have a group of a half a dozen junior executives that I coach, and our task individually is to explore the impacts of a trend where being on an extreme is rewarded, being abusive of the opposite end of the extreme is rewarded. And none of that really shows up in the company business. It's held as a belief that's sort of an unmentionable. We refer to it as the alligator under the table. or the swarm of alligators under the table that don't ever come surface. And seeing if anybody else has had that, there is virtually nothing available on the internet or even through the three Gen AI applications that address the issue of unmentionable beliefs and practices, emerging into design of practices, and especially organization design, team design, diversity, equity, inclusion issues, et cetera.
James, that for me, that sparks Dave Gray's culture map work, which is a very simple kind of iceberg-like framework, but it's a series of prompts to get into the unmentionable and to make the invisible visible. And I've used it a few times, and it's helped with that. At least that's something I'll try to find a link to it.
Yeah, I think that came onto the radar screen in the first round of conversation, and the conditions where that seems to work really well, and I would like some advice on it, is where there is a common purpose and a common end that they're trying to achieve. What I'm describing is where they're actually trying to drive opposite outcomes without ever expressing that they want to drive opposite outcomes. They simply sabotage all the other outcomes.
So they're like, typically where I go with that is deciding as a group, is this a polarity to be managed, or is this a tension that needs to be resolved? And sometimes without trying to resolve the content of the tension, but just deciding, do we need to live with both of these things and manage it? And do we agree that we're going to do that? Or are we trying to resolve and one will live and the other will die? And I just sometimes like having that conversation outside of whatever the meat of the tension is can be helpful.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're looking for, examples of places where it's been done successfully and we can't find them. Is that, how do you make an organization continue to work where your executive team leaves the room in consensus and then all goes in opposite directions?
Yeah.
And I can tell you the answer, organization design wise, is you fire a couple of them and the rest of them tend to get in line until they quit.
Yeah.
It worked well for a very large hotel chain.
I'm loving the examples, and I don't know, probably not everyone is in the shared document, but I'm seeing some, quite a lot of examples going in there that I love from, and that are from, ranging from, you know, really high level challenging to quite practical. So for example, situation of merging two existing groups into a new organization, or looking for opportunities for regenerative mutual value creation. So the breadth of different situations that could benefit from, you know, looking for these examples is quite incredible. I have one more. Oh, how are we going for time? We've only got a few minutes left. I wanted to, Kate, put you on the spot a little bit, but I know you're really involved with B Corp. Is there anything we can learn from that community or movement that around sharing examples and best practices?
I don't know that there is a source that is as well curated as this one. I'm super thrilled about knowing that this exists. But there are a lot of things that talk about impact models, which is one of the ways that that B Lab assesses whether or not an organization qualifies for B Corp certification. And so there's lots of great information about that. And if you, I think it's bcorporation.net on the web. My guess is you can find some good information there.
Yeah, I'm adding it to the drive.
Awesome.
Yeah, there was a real There was a real question when we started the project, because the bias of the people involved in the project is that we want to move toward a better world with better practices. And there are certain practices that are there that are real, they exist, but we wouldn't recommend them to any of our clients, but that sure is a choice you could make, right? And so a lot of the great resources that are out there, B-Lab included, is sort of showing like, this is a better model. Like these are models to move toward. But we made a really deliberate choice with this project to try to just show the universe of options, so that an organization can see both where they are and where they might go. And so trying to have it representative of all of the things that are in practice, whether they're good or bad, and then use those advantages and disadvantages to call out. I mean, some of those are like, you go into them and it's like, it's there, but it's just like all disadvantages. And we're like, really, no one should be doing this, but people are, you know? So anyway, I just think that's an interesting, it was a real kind of conversation in the project of whether or not to include harmful practices.
Right. Stephanie, we've got to the end of the time. So I just have to say on behalf of everyone, thank you so much for coming and giving us so much to share. And yes, here's the ways that people can get even more involved. We'll also send all of these links around to everyone. So I need to hand back to Tanya to kind of close us out, but we'll share the chat, the shared document, this presentation, I think, and look forward to continuing to collaborate. Tanya, anything else we need to say?
Well, I want to thank you both for your time and sharing this with the community. We're trying to start a little bit of let's continue the conversation on our social media post. So if you have a moment and have an aha or two you might want to put into the chat, then one of our volunteers on our digital content team will take a look at it and try to incorporate some outcomes that were today, and then maybe continue the conversation, which is our intention behind our LinkedIn activities. So very much thank you all for being here. We'll look forward to seeing you again. We've got other sessions. We're going to finish the year full calendar. And this was an absolutely wonderful session. So thank you, Stephanie, for bringing your time and energy here.
Thank you all. So lovely to meet you. And I hope I see you all again.
See you all again soon.
I'll stay online for a moment. If anybody has any questions that's new to the community, I'm happy to help and answer with anything.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tanya.
I'll stay here a few minutes.
Thank you. Bye.
Keep it open.